Accession number 28896, Reel 15.
Mr. Blewett, Reel 15. What was the date that you landed?
I think it would be about the middle of November sometime, maybe about the 12th or 13th. Can't remember exactly. But we were just, after we'd got more or less established in this zoo, we had to go back down to the docks, pick our lorries up and start work. The first time we went anywhere, we had to go to make a camp, or we'd get out of the zoo, let somebody else come in. So we were going to a place called Sue Caras, which is farther up the coast, a bit inland, but a bit farther up the coast. And we established a camp there where it was under canvas. The lorries were just parked round about. And we soon found out the reason that we didn't get the tropical kit issued, because it was middle of November. And it was bitter cold. When it rained, it was really throwing it down. And we were huddled around fires most of the time. Used to get a big fire going up. But then they started working. You had to go down to the port of Bourne, which was the next one up from Algiers. And they'd already established stores there, rations and whatnot, petrol, everything. And you had to go down there and get your... You used to go down in convoy from Sukaras, pick your allotted stores up and take it farther up the line.
Was it the same routine? You were given the task beforehand?
Yeah, just the same.
And where were you
travelling groceries?
And where were you travelling to? Which unit
were
you supporting?
Well, round about. We were going up to... there's some of the places. Medjez al-Bab was one. Up towards Kasserine, that was another place. But we're just going up and delivering stuff. They may be out in the wilds, you know. Then we moved from Sukaras up to another place, a bit farther up. As the frontline troops went up, we were advancing just behind them and taking them once they got sort of in. You were taking their stuff up from rations.
How close to the front line did you get before you know?
Well, there were some times we were nearer than what we thought. We used to always think, well, we're all right here. Even have a game of football in the field. But we're still under... Well, we weren't exactly under canvas. What happened was they took the superstructure off the back of the lorry, planted that down in... We were in a field, or not a field, flat bit, and put the tarpaulins and whatnot and made our own little abodes there, which were all right. You were on the ground, sleeping on the deck, but at least you were dry.
And was that sleeping on the ground without any mattress or anything?
No mattresses, just the deck. We used to put our ground sheet down. You had three blankets. There was no pillows. You just made a pillow out of your kit bag. So that was all right, except I'm just speaking for our little... We had about 8 in our underneath the superstructure. And we heard a rustling one night. What the hell was that? No. And then we found out we were getting rats. And we're coming up. And if you had any bits of chocolate, anything to eat, chocolate or anything like that, you'd feel the teeth marks. So you'd move the next morning, you'd get up, those that weren't driving on duty to get the lot and move the whole superstructure to one side, find these little holes or wherever they'd come from, pour the petrol down, match, boom, you know. So you'd get rid of the rats that way, but you'd get rid of them because they were still there. So we used to be extra careful. There were scorpions as well. So I thought, well, I don't fancy being on the deck with these scorpions. One of the lads, he got bit. He'd had his boots and just had them alongside, and just put it on the morning. And then there was a scorpion come out and bit him, stung him, I should say. And of course we said, well, what, thinking, so stung by a scorpion, we'll be dead in a couple of minutes, you know. But apparently there was different types. Anyway, they whipped him away to a French doctor, and it turned out that this wasn't a black one, it was a green one or something. It was all right. It was inconvenient for him, and it swelled up and painful, but it didn't do it. But after that, we were always trying to watch yourself. You never had any boots laid about handy for things to come in. There's quite a lot of spiders and these scorpions. I was a bit dodgy with them. What we used to do was, if you found any, you'd keep them, you make a circle of petrol, chuck them in the middle, and this is just for amusement, more or less, set fire to them, and they'd be killing each other, you know, fighting each other. But that was just...
So you're on the desert floor, in effect, or on the ground, I should say, with the using the lorry's superstructure, as you say. What about latrines? What about latrines?
There was very few trees at around there, round about this place where we were. So what happened when we started getting compost rations? And the petrol that we used to use was in what we used to call leakers. In like a 5-gallon tin, but half of them were never full. They used to leak something awful. I used to always think to myself that the tankers that brought them over from England, they were just like a floating bomb, because there must have been as much petrol down below as there was on the top, you know. So what I thought, well, I'm right, I'm going to make myself a bed here. So with the bits of wood off the compo, the rations used to get a box for 14 men. There was all sorts in it. Tea and sugar, mixed tea and sugar. Tea, sugar and milk, I should say, like dried milk. Tins of soup, M&V. Sometimes bacon, rolled up bacon, which was quite good. And you'd also have the wogs, the Arabs, coming round, selling the earths, eggs. You'd come round. You'd go to a place, and it was bare. There was nothing to be seen. You'd park up, and within 10 minutes, there'd be about 20 Arabs coming round with these eggs, mostly eggs, like a hood, with these eggs in the back of them. And they were all for tea. There were not so much, they didn't want your money, they wanted something to barter with, like tea. Tea was a big thing. So after a bit, we used to get a bit wise. And after we'd had our tea, we used to put it out in the sun and dry it up. And then we used to barter that for the eggs. But they were a nuisance. And like I say, the biggest thieves there were. You put anything down, and if you didn't keep your eye on it...
Did they offer their women to you?
No. There were very... there was a few of the lads that tried it on, you know what I mean? So try it on. The big thing about it was the Arabs that have donkeys, and the man would be riding on the donkey, and the women did have a, if it was firewood or anything like that, about here to here, on the heads, walking along behind, and he's this, the Arab with a stick on the donkey, and that got up a lot of the lads' goats, like, you know. So they used to pull him off the donkey, put the woman, sat her on, and make him carry the thing. And he was jabbering all the time, like, you know, and she didn't want to do this because she knew as soon as he got out of sight, he'd be belting her with a stick, you know. But he's...
It's their custom, wasn't it? It's
their custom, yeah. We've seen... the first time we've seen an Arab funeral, it was a woman, apparently, and she was stretched out on the... He was on, like, a donkey thing, and she was stretched out. She was stiff as a board, and maybe it was a board underneath, I don't know, but she was and all bound up, like, and all the villagers behind them tripping along. We never seen what happened to her. You know, we didn't get to the followers of where she was getting buried or burnt or whatever. We don't know what happened there.
Did they turn nasty at all at any point in time?
Only if you tried to... they didn't. They weren't armed with anything. So you could generally frighten them off if they did, but they were mostly yapping, you know. Not to any extent that they pose a threat. Not at all, no. They were quite happy if they could get in somewhere where they could steal your stores. If you were fetching stores up from the bone and fetching it up, if you had to stop anywhere, you had to, there was two of you, and the driver, the second driver used to have to be in the back of the lorry to make sure, with his rifle, to make sure that none of them got in the back, because if they did, like that, as you were going along the road, they'd be chucking stuff out, you know. So they weren't very well liked, that's all.
Come back to again to your temporary camps, which is basically what you were. You'd been making temporary camps as you moved on.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I say.
What about the toilet situation? How did you cope with
that?
Well,
all you had to do, well, when you were sort of on the go, you used to have to take a spade, go out off the road or whatever, and just dig a hole, do your business, fill it in again. But when you got into a camp, that was the first thing they did, was make a latrine, maybe from there, about 15 foot or something like that, dig it down. They had one or two who seemed to regard that, who were attached to the cookhouse, and they used to do it. But generally, they used to... so many details to dig it out, and then they used to just put a long pole along and a bit of a tent, not a tent, canvas shelter, not on the top, canvas shelter, give you a bit of privacy. But of course, when you got in and there was the pole there, and you would just sort of squat with a pole and doing your business, and then after, well, maybe about, this was, said it used to be stink, it used to stink awful. Two or three, there'd be a shovel there, you're supposed to shovel it, bit of dirt over it. And then after it had been there, maybe about two or three days, there'd be pouring lime and stuff like that down there.
Covering it. It must have been precarious trying to balance
it. Oh, it was, especially if it rained. There were some comical things, like no one actually ever fell down, but there was no beer or anything, so they couldn't get drunk and all. But a few of the hardened drinkers used to try and get wine off these Arabs. It's like tasted like vinegar. I just tried it once, like vinegar it was. But some of them, like I say, the hardened drinkers, they wouldn't drink it. I couldn't.
And keeping clean, how did you manage that?
Well, we had a little water tanker, 1500 weight thing, and his first job when he got, it was a Scotch lad, Jimmy Grant, his first job was when we got anywhere, his first job was to go to a water point and get filled up with the tanker, come back, generally with a cookhouse, they used to have like tanks, fill that up, and then backwards and forwards to make sure you got water, and then you used to either go on like a wash place. They made like a wash place out, and you go around get a wash. There's nothing. The only time you got a bath was when you got one of these petrol things and just filled it up with water, and 1 foot in it. Couldn't get a proper bath. Just clean yourself down as best as possible.
Was your water rationed individually?
It was at once. It all depended if you, when this lad, when he come back and if he could get it. Sometimes he'd go on his own and couldn't get it. And then that was when it was rationed. You used to get a water bottle and that was it. I was supposed to do everything like with it. It used to go very sparingly on getting washed. They used to insist on you having a shave. But in some places, well, you know, if you were away from the camp, you'd turn a blind eye to it. But once you got back to the camp, you know, supposed to get a shave every day. But
So you were moving, as you say.
We were moving nearly all the time.
And I think I asked you how close did you get to the actual.
Well, when we in Africa, Tabessa, I think, was the nearest at the time. I think it was a place called Tabessa, and there was a big Yankee. By this time, we'd come into contact with the Yanks, mostly on lorries, you know. And went to this, taken ammunition up to this dump, and it was manned by Americans, mostly coloured Americans, who had white sergeants and officers, that the rank and file were coloured, more like our pan, doing all the donkey work. And we were delivering ammunition, and there was also Arabs used to get employed in these places, not so much with the ammunition, because but anything above that. But when we got into this ammunition dump, and we were taken, even though you weren't supposed to unload, the driver's supposed to be his perk, he wasn't supposed to unload, but you used to get in, because all you wanted to do was to get in and get out as soon as possible, not with any air raids going on. And we found out that the Yanks were wiring the place up, ready to blow it up. I thought, bloody hell, we must be near. That was about as near as it was. In the event they didn't blow it up, because the forces, the German forces and whatnot, and the Axis forces, I should say, they packed it up. So it was just outside Tunis when they packed it up. But previous to that, they used to get these shell and guns. When we were in the First Army, the Eighth Army, we were coming up with like a pincer movement, and it was very amusing at this particular day. There was a little Yankee. He just looked like Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, just like the little fat one. And he had a cigar, smoking a cigar in the ammunition thing. That's how lax it was. But he had this cigar on, and they started, boom, you know, shells, and they all disappeared. Which we were the same. Under a lorry with a, you know, any shelter you could get. And it stopped. And this, come on, this Yankee sergeant, come on, get yourself out. And this little fella and his mate, and he was still underneath the, and he said, come on, he said, we're going to get this. He said, Oh, no, I have to say it the way he said it, make it appreciate. And he said, no, I ain't coming out, I ain't coming out. And he said, come on, they stop shelling now, we're all right. No, he said, them shells there don't talk to me. And his mate said, what do you mean they talk to you? He said, when you hear them coming over, they're going, boom. He said, I don't hear that. This is true. He said, they're saying, you ain't going back to Alabama. And I laughed like hell about that. And I always remembered that for later years of reunions. That one. But anyway, we moved back away from the dump. We just moved just outside, and then we got to go to Tunis.
So essentially, you were picking up supplies off the docks.
Yeah.
Taking them up to another dump behind.
That's right.
Close to land. Yeah,
up there.
And presumably the units
backwards itself.
Yeah, and then the units themselves came and picked their stuff up and took them into the land.
That's right. Yeah. But there's sometimes when you're going along a road, like say this, and there was big. The not say mountains but hills on the side,
like a valley type valley floor,
and they were firing across at each other, and we were going through. So I hope they keep going, don't be concentrating on the road, you know. And they were
when the occasions when you were under fire.
Oh yeah,
what was your feelings?
Worried. They'd come along when we one time, and this they used to have MPs. Mom, and when you were under any danger, the MPs were all right. It was only when they got into big camps or towns that they used to get officious. They used to stop you. They stopped the convoy, right? And they said, "Now this is what they used to call Messerschmitt Alley." And the Messerschmitts used to come over, and where they see transport going along, and just come down a machine gun you. So they. What used to happen, they used to stop the convoys, and you used to have to go up one at a time. And you used to put your foot down and go like the clappers, you know. And again, the driver, and there was a one in the back, banging on like, get your foot down there, somebody. This particular, our planes were there as well, so obviously now and again you'd get a mistake. You'd be going along, and it happened to me once, and my mate clapped, bang on. I thought, oh, she said, no, it's all right, it's one of ours. Now you tell me. I was ready to bail out, you know. Because they used to do it, they used to come down one at a time up Messerschmitt Alley. That was outside Medjez El Bab, I think, that one was.
What was the general condition of the roads that you were driving on?
Well, that was another thing. It was, they weren't too bad, but with the sun shining, it used to glare. And we had no sunglasses. And so, in comparison with the German forces, they all had the sunglasses on. We didn't have any sunglasses, so what we used to use was our gas cape. It used to be green, like a eye shade was to use with the gas. So we used to be using these green things, because the glare of the road, the white, you were going like sunblind sometimes, until some bright sparks had... You couldn't buy anything. There was no, you know, we were out in the wilds. You couldn't get anything to buy. But as soon as we got near the, when we were up in Tunis and the prisoners of war come in, that was the big thing straight away. We were bartering cigarettes for the sometimes. Goggles.
And the condition of the roads, were they...
But the roads weren't so bad. You know, they were a bit dusty and everything, but they weren't too bad. They weren't, obviously, not a proper road like outside, but because you were going, say, from Soukaras down to Bourne, and it was supposed to be a good road, but farther up from that, it was just.
And did you have a convoy discipline of a set speed and distance between lorries?
You're supposed to be. But most of the time, you were belting along pretty steady.
Were there accidents that you recall?
We never had an accident. when we were in, and the only thing was, there was we had our corporal, when we were doing the convoys, they were on motorbikes to keep, you know, slow down a bit or get on a bit or come on, whatever. And we'd stopped, the convoy had stopped for a cup of tea, for a brew up. That was another big thing about brewing up. Every time you stopped, you got your tins out, your bit of sand, your bit of petrol, set a light to it and get your different tins for brewing up. And we're having a brew up, and this other lorry wasn't in our convoy. Coming, we were pulling off the road, but this corporal, he was just standing more or less, and this lorry come and hit his arm. He broke his arm anyway, and never stopped me. Well, this one flying by, and maybe never even noticed. But he was they put him in the lorry, and I volunteered to. I fancied it, like, I'd have the motorbike. So I had the motorbike for about 3 weeks, which was a bit of a laugh, because at first we got back to the camp, and so the sergeant, he said, well, do you want to keep on until he comes back? I said, yeah, I'll have it. And because it was a question of getting out of the lorries, it was very hot, the sun down, there was no cabs, you couldn't get any, so you got a bit of relief. And I had this, and the very first time, when I come back to the camp, the very first convoy I was going out with officially as a DR, revving up, everybody's away, and right, I pulled the clutch, and the wire snapped, the clutch cable snapped, and they come back, and I said, what? I said, it's this bloody thing, I said, it's snapped, take it down to workshops, he said, they'll get it down, and follow us, you know which way we're going, follow us up. So I went down to the workshop. All they did was put like a little blob of solder on the end when it come through. I'd done about 20 miles and it broke again. So I had to promptly stick my motorbike in the back of a lorry, and I was known as the six-wheel DR after that.